We thought it was fitting on Anzac Day to turn to the Australian War Memorial for our Twitterati guest. Liz Holcomb is the web manager of the Australian War Memorial, and she joins me now to discuss her week on Twitter. I imagine it's been a busy one. Hello, Liz.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Welcome to RN Drive.
Thank you very much.
Now, have you found you've had increased traffic this week on your account?
Yes, there is. And we find this with most Anzac Days. There's a greater interest in what is happening on the day.
Now, that brings me to my question before I get into your Twitterati picks.
Yep.
If you go on your very excellent website, it explains a little bit about the mission of the Australian War Memorial. It's a shrine, a museum and an archive.
Yes.
The mission is to assist Australians to remember and interpret and understand the Australian experience of war and the enduring impact on Australian society. Now, obviously, the memorial is a physical place that you can visit. What do you think that digital channels like Twitter do to help the Australian War Memorial in its mission?
Look, I think Twitter has been wonderful for places like the memorial or anybody in the glam sector, galleries, libraries, archives and museums.
Oh, that's right. The glam sector, I was about to say, what is that? What's the glam sector?
Because it gives us another way of people of experiencing what's in the collection. You know, when you go along to somewhere like the memorial, you're only seeing a small proportion of the collection that those places have. So services like Twitter let us provide people with information about the other things in the collection, the things that we've got digitised and available on the website but aren't going to be on display in the galleries. So Twitter's been really powerful for that, and I want to talk about that too if I can when we get on a bit
further. Terrific. Well, let's go to your first Twitterati pick, which is about the British Museum. And tell me a bit about where you found this and a little bit about the content.
This is a fairly short article, I suppose, but I'm always quite interested in these ones. I found it from a Twitter handle called Museums at MQ. It's an Australian Twitter site, and they tweet a lot of things from the glam sector. So it's a sort of an aggregation, I suppose, of things happening around the world. They certainly talk about a lot of Australian stuff, which is interesting. But this article is a good example, I think. They picked this article up from the Daily Mail, and it just talks about how the British Museum is the world's second most popular cultural institution. Which, of course, as soon as I saw that, I thought, well, what's the first? And the first is...
It's not Disneyland, is it?
No, it's the Louvre.
The Louvre, that would
the
make
The Louvre,
sense.
Yes. I was very pleased to see it was the Louvre. And, of course, these are behemoths in the museum world, both of those organisations. Yes.
And are there things that the Australian War Memorial and other, you know, museums and other cultural places like that in Australia can learn from some of that best practice?
Yes, there is. I mean, it's a little awkward, I suppose, in some ways, talking about a Twitter feed like the memorials, because real people run the Twitter feed, but we also have our own Twitter account. So the things that interest us as individuals might not necessarily be the same as what interests us as organisations. But in the case of this particular one, looking at what the people like the British Museum, Tate Online, Brooklyn Museum, the Digital New Zealand, that's another fantastic place to follow. The Kiwis are very advanced. You're always learning good things, good approaches, good ideas, things that you can tap into and learn from.
Now, this leads us on to our second pick, to your second pick, which is about the Getty Museum, which, of course, is another behemoth in the world of museums. And it appears to have added another 77,000 images to its open content archive. So tell me where you found this and a little bit more about those images.
This was from Open Culture. Again, this is another aggregating service, I guess. It's collecting information, again, from the glam sector across the world. But these guys are particularly interested in culture being made open, freely available to the public. So it'll look at things like Creative Commons licences, open licensing, providing access online to the cultural riches that are stored in our museums. This particular one, I suppose, is part two of a bigger story. The Getty Museum, I think it was last year, or maybe it was the year before, put a lot of its high-res images out to anybody to use for whatever purpose they chose, which personally I find really exciting. A lot of this stuff is in the public domain. Copyright has expired. The images are amazing. it seems like a wonderful gift to the world, really, to be able to access this material in high res.
Absolutely. And, I mean, your next Twitterati pick talks a little bit about, the issues of making those kinds of archives that are in our museums accessible. That digitisation process that you've talked about is still ongoing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. And to what extent has the Australian War Memorial got a plan to make most of that material available online, or are there some restrictions?
There are always restrictions, usually to do with copyright. Sometimes it's the nature of the material. It's too fragile to actually digitise. But putting that to one side, if we've digitised a lot, you can see over 330,000 images on our website now of the items in our collection, like photographs, works of art, trucks, compasses, buttons, aeroplanes, and a lot of documents. We've got more than 2 million images of documents now on the website. Digitising documents is relatively slow because a lot of the material we have is original. It's private letters and diaries. You can't sort of, feed these things through a machine at high speed. You have to do them one by one. So it's a labour of love. But we've got a long-term plan to keep digitising material on our website at the moment. In fact, you'll see the benefits of one such program. We've got 149 or maybe it's 150 now. Diaries and letters, not 150 diaries and letters, 150 people's diaries and letters. These are people who served in the First World War. They collected a variety of documents during their service, and we've digitised those and made them available free, in full colour, on our website. Eyewitness accounts, if you like, of the First World War.
So what a terrific result, not just for school children who are often forced to do assignments on the various wars, but for anybody, the whole interest in family history and people wanting to know perhaps what happened to grandparents and great-grandparents, being able to access that information to give context to what was happening to their relatives.
And that's right. That's often the only thing that you can provide. There might not be your great-uncle might not have left his letters and diaries, but someone else's great-uncle did, and you can learn from that material.
Absolutely. And that leads me to your final pick, which is from a blog called discontents.com.au, which is written by the manager of Trove, the National Library of Australia. And Trove would be known to anybody out there, any historians, amateur or professional, that are looking to get information about Australia and Australians. And this was a really interesting little blog post that he did at Easter. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes, this is interesting. Tim does a lot of interesting stuff. Before he worked at Trove, he was doing this as well, and it's well worth catching up with his writings. This particular one, which has got a rather nice title, I thought, Easter Experiments, he starts with looking at how he could make an interface to some records, and in this case, he's got a whole lot of First World War photographs. The way it displays is quite powerful. I think you get a different sense of individuals from looking at this. But he also talks in his article about other things. He reminds us that the nature of place, connecting a person to a place, a newspaper to a place, is quite a powerful thing to do. But he also goes on to say Trove isn't just newspapers, and this might be something that your listeners might be interested in. I hadn't actually realised it till I read Tim's post that a vast amount of Radio National content is available through Trove.
Wow. And There you go. That's good to know. It is.
And Tim has been doing some really interesting experiments looking at this data and how to present it. And I think that's going to be a really useful source for researchers in looking at how events have occurred, how they took place, what the history is of them, how they were reported by that Radio National content. So, yeah, I recommend that one.
Liz Holcomb, Web Manager for the Australian War Memorial, thank you so much for joining us on this Anzac Day version of Twitterati.
Thank you.